My name is Brad Stoner, and I'm delighted to welcome you to the first clinical case series session at the STD Prevention Conference. Can you hear me? Okay, good. Delighted to have you here today. It is my pleasure to welcome the presenters and the discussants. First, I'd like to introduce my co-moderator, Janet Wilson, who is from Leeds General Infirmary in Leeds in the United Kingdom, and welcome our three illustrious panelists. First, Dr. Raj Patel from the University of Southampton in Southampton, UK. Dr. Somesh Gupta, who is from the All India Institute of Medical Sciences in New Delhi, India. And Dr. Laura Bachman, who is from Wake Forest Baptist Health and Wake Forest University Medical Center in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Welcome, panelists. You're all expert clinicians. We're here to discuss the cases. I'm going to turn the podium over to Janet Wilson, and she'll introduce the first case. We'll have case presentation, discussion by the panelists, and then audience participation. So welcome to the program.
Thank you. And it's great to see so many of you here, despite it being very early in the morning. When we do get to the part where it's open to the panel, if you want to ask a question, please can you stand up? And when you do ask a question, please give your name and the institution you work prior to asking the question. So our first presenter is presenting on the spectrum of probable congenital syphilis in Massachusetts 2013, and it's Marla Early Moss who will be doing the presentation. So Marla, please come to the podium.
Thank you, Janet. As she stated, good morning. My name is Marla Early Moss, and I am a disease intervention specialist for the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. In the three cases we will discuss this morning, I led the contact tracing investigation with input from our public health nurse, Barbara Coughlin, who is not here, and our medical director, Dr. Kathy Hsu. In the past decade, Massachusetts has reported 0 to 1 cases of congenital syphilis annually. In the summer of 2013, we were struck by having 3 cases reported to us that have met the surveillance case definition for probable congenital syphilis. I will present the 3 cases to you this morning in the order they were reported so as to highlight a spectrum of clinical and public health management issues. Case 1. In June of 2013, a 36-week gestational age infant female was born to a 27-year-old HIV-negative African-American woman who presented to the emergency department with several days of abdominal pain unresponsive to ibuprofen. In the emergency department, she was found to be in labor, had no history of prenatal care, but did have a history of drug and alcohol use. She delivered in the emergency department and left the hospital after a 1-day stay, but the infant remained in the hospital for detox. Several days later, maternal serology done at the time of delivery revealed an RPR of a 1 to 4 and a TPPA positive. Mother was classified as having latent syphilis of unknown duration and was treated with 1 dose of benzidine penicillin G, 2.4 milliunits, IM administered 13 days post-delivery. She was then lost to follow-up. The infant's physical exam was normal. Her labs included an RPR of 1 to 2 and a positive TPPA. Her CSF cell count and protein were normal with a non-reactive VDRL. Long bone radiographs were not done. At this time, based on the maternal syphilis serology with no history of treatment, the infant was classified as having probable congenital syphilis. She was treated with a 10-day course of aqueous penicillin G, 100 to 150,000 units per kilogram per day. 6 months post-delivery, the infant's RPR was non-reactive. Our question to the panelists would be, do you think this infant has true congenital syphilis? And 2, would you have handled this case any differently? Case 2. In July of 2013, a 38-week gestational age infant male was born to a 20-year-old HIV-negative Hispanic woman with late prenatal care. At 28 weeks gestation, the mother was diagnosed with early latent syphilis. At this time, her RPR was 1 to 16 and the TPPA was positive. She was treated with benzathine penicillin G, 2.4 million units IM, administered approximately 8 weeks before delivery. At the time of delivery, the maternal RPR titer remained the 1 to 16. The infant's physical exam was normal. However, his RPR was a 1 to 64 with the positive TPPA. The CSF VDRL was reactive with a CSF white blood count of 34, a red blood cell count of 15,000, protein 152. Long bone radiographs were normal. Due to the infant's RPR titer being fourfold higher than the maternal titer at delivery and the elevated CSF cell count, protein, and reactive CSF VDRL, the infant was classified as having probable congenital neurosyphilis. He was treated with a 10-day course of aqueous penicillin G, 100 to 150,000 units per kilogram per day. In September of 2013, two months post-treatment, the infant's RPR was a 1-to-1, and his TPPA remained positive. In April of 2014, this infant's RPR titer was non-reactive with a negative TPPA. Okay. I only have the questions. Okay. Our question to the panelists would be,
there is case two.
Our question to the panelists would be, one, would you have treated the mother with more penicillin? Two, would you have expected the maternal titer to have dropped more rapidly? And three, would you have followed the infant's 10-day course of aqueous penicillin G with IM penicillin? Case three. In June of 2013, a 37-week gestational age infant male was born via unremarkable vaginal delivery to an 18-year-old HIV-negative white female with good prenatal care, a non-reactive RPR at 8 weeks gestation, and no identified risk for syphilis acquisition during pregnancy. The RPR was not repeated at the time of delivery. At 3 weeks of age, the infant developed a sore at the insertion site of the internal fetal monitor, which did not improve with washing and application of Vaseline. At eight weeks of age, the pediatrician noted a rash on the infant's head and recommended a derm consult, which never took place. At 11 weeks of age, the infant presented to another pediatrician with a two-week history of nasal congestion, a two-day history of a rash on his trunk and extremities, irritability, and a fever of 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit. He was transported to the hospital to rule out sepsis. At this time, his physical exam was notable for ill appearance, splenomegaly, multiple scab dry scalp lesions surrounded by areas of alopecia, and a new generalized maculopapular blanching rash over his trunk, back, and limbs with small whitish ulcerations on his hard palate. His initial white blood cell count was 42 with a hematocrit of 26. His platelets were 146,000. His RPR titer was a 1 to 512 with a positive TPPA. The CSF VDRL was a 1 to 4 with a CSF white blood count of 11, red blood cell count 0, and protein of 96. Long bone radiographs were reported as suspicious for syphilitic involvement of the tibias bilaterally. Based on the physical exam, x-ray, and CSF findings, the infant was classified as probable congenital neurosyphilis with neurologic involvement, and was treated with a 14-day course of aqueous penicillin G, 100 to 150,000 units per kilogram per day IV, followed by three weekly doses of benzathine penicillin G, 50,000 units IM. The diagnosis, of course, prompted maternal and paternal workup. At 12 weeks post-delivery, maternal RPR was a 1 to 64 with a positive TPPA, and the paternal RPR was a 1 to 256 positive with a positive TPPA. Both were diagnosed with early latent syphilis and were treated with benzathine penicillin G, 2.4 million units, one dose IM. The father subsequently reported three other female sexual contacts, all of whom were from Eastern Europe.
Further contact investigation around the infant revealed that there were no close household contacts other than the mother and father. We notified the hospital's infection control practitioner of the mother's infectious stage at time of delivery and advised all labor and delivery personnel who had substantial unprotected contact with maternal secretions to obtain serologic testing and consider prophylaxis. 13 staff members were notified, and only one could not rule out unprotected exposure. Serologic testing was facilitated. A number of pediatric clinic staff and pediatricians at the infants admitting hospital had unprotected exposure to the infant's rash and elected serologic testing and follow-up observation rather than prophylaxis. All repeat serologically results that were done remain negative. Four clinicians who have not yet had repeat serology have been recommended to do so. On October 22nd of 2013, 1 month and 10 days from treatment start date, the infant's RPR dropped from a 1 to 512 to a 1 to 128. The infant was lost to follow-up for a period of time. An RPR was done on May 22nd, 2014, 8 months post-treatment, and it was a 1 to 4. An LP was done on May 29th, and the results are still pending. Our question to the panelists would be, Our question to the panelists would be, one, would you have managed the cases or contact investigation differently? Two, would you have mandated that all exposed labor and delivery and pediatric personnel be presumptively treated with penicillin? Three, at what population prevalence of syphilis infection would you recommend routinely repeating syphilis screening in all pregnant women at the time of delivery, in addition to the screening done upon presentation to prenatal care? The final comments. Cases epidemic. Okay.
Thank you very much.
You stay here. So these are three very interesting cases, and we want to start with our discussants. Who would like to start about... What were your first questions for the first case?
The first question...
Did we think it was congenital syphilis?
Yes.
You can go back.
Both cases, two questions were, do you think it was congenital syphilis, and would you have handled it differently?
Okay.
And I think it doesn't really matter because you have to handle this case the way you handled it for medical legal reasons. It fits the, you followed the guideline. The experiment that you'd want to do is to leave the child untreated to see what happens, and you can't do that. So I think we would all be forced to manage this case just as you've done. I'm not sure as to what proportion of these cases are actually syphilis. I mean, Do we know from untreated series or inadvertent mistreatments as to what proportion was syphilis? Any historical? No. But I think.
Does anybody know that question? The answer to that question?
It was not the interview that addressed the entire.
Sorry. So the question is, if you have latent syphilis, what proportion of women? Babies born without these partial rises in the child or just reflecting positive growth in the child, if women are treated, what proportion of these children do actually develop syphilis? Do we have anybody that has? Yes.
So the literature, so Khalil Gannon from Baltimore, the literature suggests that with late latent, the likelihood of transmission to the infant is 10%. So with early, anywhere between 50 to 100, depending on what.
But would anybody have, I think for medical legal reasons, you have to do exactly what you've done.
Okay.
Who would fault that?
And would anybody disagree with that, if that is the consensus of the audience? Okay.
Well, what about the fact that the infant titer is the same as the maternal titer?
Or less, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This makes you think it isn't, but I think you have to go with it, don't you? So you say, what makes you think?
Right, why couldn't it just be passive?
Well, it's actually it is, isn't it? That's what we're all thinking, but you can't not.
Again, folks, this is a conversation in the front row, and we're not hearing it.
Sorry.
For
Perhaps when you speak, if you stand up and look to the audience, that would be helpful. Can you stand up so much?
For the reasons explained by the Raj, by in the comments of the Raj, syphilis is always preferred to be over-treated rather than under-treated. If you miss a single case of congenital syphilis, that the consequences are catastrophic. So I also agree that we need to treat the way you treat it.
Okay, I think now let's move on to your second case and the questions there. Should the mother have been given more treatment? Would the maternal titers be expected to drop more rapidly? And then should the infant have also been given more treatment?
Laura,
could you stand up, please?
Yeah.
The mother.
We want to just turn the table around. How much bifilin did
the mother receive? 2.4 million.
One dose.
One dose.
Yes. Okay. Because there was a comment about multiple doses.
In the book, she did actually receive multiple doses, but it was not in line. She received 1.2 one day, and then she received 4 days later another 1.2, and she was not treated adequately for us. So we recommended the correct treatment. At one time.
Right. This mother was an early lady.
Correct. She had no symptoms.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think that's controversial because the treatment of mom is recommended to treat as an adult, non-pregnant adult.
Yes.
But I think there are some articles out there mm-hmm. that say, well, maybe we should give an extra dose of the 2.4 million of bifilin. Just to, you know, there may be some improved outcome there, but I don't know if I could 100% say that would be the way I would have gone.
At what point did you give that second dose?
I think the week after you do the first treatment is what I understand. The recommendation to be if you're going to do a second dose.
Try
the
microphone.
The patient did receive the 2.4, the correct dose of the week after.
So she had 1.2 million doses.
And then the following week.
And then a 2.4 million.
Correct.
So, kind of. not optimal in terms of the time.
But she didn't have a drop in her RPR.
No, she did not.
And remind me again with the timing of that. There's a lot of information I didn't have my pen.
Oh, that's right. So 8 weeks prior to delivery, she received 1.2, and then 4 days later, 1.2, and then the following week. So actually, it was really 9 weeks, and then 8 weeks, she got the adequate treatment of the 2.4 milliunits.
And then the titer,
prior.
The timing of the titer is reminding me of that.
The titer was a 1 to 16, and she remained a 1 to 16 at delivery.
Okay.
And that was 8 weeks post-treatment.
8 weeks post-treatment, she
yes.
didn't move. Once again, I mean, she's an early latent classified by her history of previous negative serology or epidemiology.
Epidemiology. She had no signs or symptoms of infection.
So she was in contact with an early case of syphilis?
We don't know, of unknown duration, basically.
She had a negative RPR about a year before?
She came to prenatal care late, so I don't know. She denied any other previous sexual activity.
But how do we know she's early, late, and versus mm-hmm. unknown duration? I'm missing that detail. Y'all can shout it out at me.
Sure. It was that she had literally said, I got pregnant and I had never had sex before that.
Oh, so
yes.
She, okay.
Yes.
So we believe that.
Okay. Well, that's what she said. We don't know if we believe it. Yes.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yes.
Because of the epidemiologic or the yes. previous serology, you know, how we would classify. And being an adult doctor, I rarely encounter someone who just had their sexual debut. So I think that wouldn't count too much.
Laura, I think we're sort of moving on with, and we've got some other questions. Could you...
The titer drop, I really don't... Yeah. If she was truly an early case, I would think she would have gone faster, but I think we're finding where that the titers don't drop at the rate we expect. So, you know, I would have liked to have seen that, but I don't know that I would have thought it was a failure, honestly. One of my colleagues had other...
And the treatment of the baby, do you think the treatment of the baby was adequate?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, the baby got an adequate response to drop in serology.
Yeah, just so one more point is that whatever you do in the last trimester may not be adequate for the baby.
Yeah.
So the baby has to be treated as something else.
Okay. Sorry? So can you go on to the your questions for that one? Which are next, aren't they?
It's right there.
So Somesh, would you like to make some comments on this case?
The first serology report was negative in first understanding this.
Yes, that was the mom. The mom
so
was
she acquired syphilis
later on
during pregnancy.
Yes.
Okay, so your question is which women should undergo another screening test in late pregnancy or just after delivery?
Yes.
You said only one case per year is the incidence that you have raised. So probably the recommendation would not be that it must be an exceptional case, and we have to look at the cost and effectiveness of any program, and I think your strategy is right not to screen again, provided there is a history of high-risk sexual behavior.
But the question is, what population prevalence would you retest? With the programs in Latin America, isn't that part of the strategy in some of the areas that another point of care test at delivery time?
Does anybody in the audience routinely do further serology in later pregnancy? And what's your prevalence? So, yes, if you could stand up and speak loudly.
Sydney Minerly, Texas, and we do delivery testing for all babies, and then we also do, or for all moms actually, at delivery, and then we also recommend in high morbidity areas that third trimester testing be administered. But that's defined by the morbidity within that jurisdiction, and we do have some hospitals that are high risk providers, and they have gone ahead and implemented third trimester testing without state law. So it is a state law for first prenatal care and also at delivery.
Okay. Thank you. And then the
mandated exposure.
Yes. So, does anybody, is that something that happens in India, Somesh?
Yeah. I don't think syphilis is transmitted promptly to, unless you handle the lesions with bare hands, like condylometalata or something like that. There is virtually no risk to healthcare.
It's a fascinating case, and these very odd, unusual cases make you wonder. I have seen something similar to this, where the actual mother was negative, the baby, who was held in hospital for other reasons, developed something that eventually turned out to be syphilis. And it was one of the grandparents coming in and cuddling the baby every day that had brought the syphilis. And you just wonder whether you can give a child a cuddle and a kiss every day, whether you can pick the thing up or not. But it appears that it has gone in that direction. So
you're mandating family screening as well as healthcare screening.
The baby went home. Did you test the other SIDS and everybody else?
The parents of the infant said that they were the only two that were in contact with this baby.
Yeah, we need to move. Okay. Right.
Only child.
Okay. Yeah. So thank you very much. Three great cases that gave us lots of discussion.